38. On page 95, right about in the middle of the place, there's a very cosmetic change to the section. I'm not going to explain it. On page 96, the next page, where we deal with item 5, I want to remove subsection 1 and 2 out there because the orders is actually further dealt with in section 46.6 of the bill that deals with mutual legal assistance. So we do not necessarily, or in this case, have to refer to subsection 1 and 2 again. Also, a similar small amendment is affected to sub-clause 4 of that clause. The next clause deals with expedited preservation of data. That's on, the heading starts on 96, the main clause is on 97 and further. The amendment that we want to propose is to clause 39.1, and that is to clarify the service provider involved. During the public consultation process, the service providers kind of interpreted this whole clause differently, and some of the service providers is subject to the RICA retention regime, whilst others are not to a certain extent, and that's mainly internet service providers. They will not necessary in terms of the RICA, or are not necessary in terms of the RICA required to store call-related information like call logs, etc. So the amendment in sub-clause 1 is merely to specify that an electronic communication service provider referred to in section 38.3, which implies that the service provider which must have the capability to intercept communications and store communication related information, but on whom obligation has not been imposed to do that, must comply with this expedited preservation of data procedure. I think that will address their concerns. A further other amendment to the clause is on page 99, where we amend sub-clause 6 to further clarify the period of operation of this clause, and we add at the end of that clause the words once for an additional period which may not exceed 90 days. So in terms of this clause, persons must store information for a period for 21 days, but it may be extended in terms of a direction in terms of section 40 by judicial officer, but only once, and the period for which it may be extended is 90 days. Although clause 40 explained that, I think due to the uncertainty and interpretation that we perceived by the in respect of the comments of the service providers, this is probably necessary to clarify that, and we agree with that amendment. Going to continue. The next major amendment which I want to discuss is on page 104, and that relates to clause 42. And that deals with the disclosure of data direction. The clause provides, amongst others, that where the expedited preservation of evidence direction is in place, or is where it is otherwise expedient to obtain data, you can apply for a disclosure of data direction, which a judicial officer may grant, and you must then make available the necessary evidence. What was raised by the service providers first, it is unsure how evidence other than data is to be dealt with in terms of this clause. One must remember that evidence can, in terms of a previous clause, be subject to a preservation of evidence direction. And the clause did not specifically specify that. It's probably a lacuna in the drafting of the clause. And we remedy this by the addition of subclause 10 on page 108, where we do specify that the articles that are subject to a preservation of evidence direction, that is not data, must be searched for, accessed and seized in terms of a warrant referred to in section 27.1. And you also then specify a police official may at any time apply for a search warrant in terms of section 27.1 to search for, access or seize an article, and that includes data that is or was subject to a preservation of evidence direction. So I think that to a large extent clarify the shortcoming that was identified by the service providers, since we now create a specific process how police can take possession of data that is not an article. And we also then say if something is under preservation order, that a police official may in any case at any time apply for a warrant to search and seize evidence and data. The next clause is on page 108. And that deals with search for and access of data where no authorization is required. It's probably necessary to explain the whole purpose of this clause. This clause emanates from suggestions that was made in international fora. How must one deal with data in the cloud? I did previously discuss this aspect. Data in the cloud is data that is actually in the cloud. It's information that is between servers. It may be between countries. Some of the servers may be located in different countries, and there's a extreme problem first to identify the country.
Yes.
I'm not sure if you are only the switched on the mic or not, but
thank you.
Okay, from an investigative perspective, it's not always certain where the data is located, which country must be approached with the terms of mutual legal assistance to provide information, or how to obtain this information. In international fora, I think two principle has crystallized. First, you can give the police officials the necessary power to access public available data. In general, that can also apply in non-cloud computing scenarios. Obviously, if I can go on the internet and access data, so can anybody else. There's no prohibition against a person to access that data. But it's quite relevant in cloud computing-based scenarios, where some of the information may be accessed in the cloud that is public available. So the first scenario in this clause deal with that and says the police can access and use this data to investigate cyber crime. On page 109, we want to propose an amendment to that clause, and we agree with this proposal. Obviously, if you can access data freely, it's not some action of search, access, and seize. And we want to strike out that word merely to specify obtain and use public data. The second scenario is B, receive non-publicly available data regardless of where the data is located geographically. If a person with lawful authority discloses data, disclose such data under certain conditions to a person. In many instances, if you have a computer service with a service provider, usually enter into a contract, and most of that contracts will have an implied or specific provision that will say, if you use our service for criminal purposes, we may divulge this information to law enforcement agencies. So that clause aims currently in terms of international proposals to deal with that aspect. Obviously, this also implies other scenarios where a person with authority to disclose data can give that to the police, but this is specifically aimed to address the cloud computing scenario. The police, during the discussions of this clause, raise a concern that we actually restrict them now to the effect that they can only receive information if it is reserved lawfully from a person as specified in paragraph B. And they pointed out that many investigations are initiated on illegally obtained information or evidence. My submission is this clause cannot be interpreted to prohibit the police to initiate any investigation, even if they received it, that information, data, or whatever, on an unlawful, in an unlawful manner. You can take, amongst others, the following example. A hacker may break into somebody's computer or break into a closed-circuit television camera, and he can actually obtain images of it's called child pornography, where a child is abused, and he gives that to the police. Obviously, there's no prohibition in this clause that tells the police that they cannot use that information to initiate an investigation. So my submission is we are comfortable as it is. We still at loggerheads with the Department of Police. Three discussions on this clause did take place. I don't think final consensus has yet been reached on this clause. But before we come to the committee again, after this week, we will propose a final clause in this regard. We finish now with investigative procedures, procedural aspects. The next chapter deals with a mutual legal assistance. That is on page 111, it's chapter 6. The first clause, affect the amendment to clause 44, merely to specifically set out that in addition to the current International Cooperation of Criminal Matters Act, this chapter may be used for preservation of evidence, and then we specifically specify in respect of what preservation of evidence can be required. It's mainly further to clarify this clause, and we agree with this insertion. On page 112, that deals with spontaneous information. Previously, when the South African Police Service addressed the committee, they referred to the current clause and brought it to our attention that the national head of the directorate, DPCI, is a separate entity in the South African police that's not subject to control of the national commissioner. And clause 41 is amended to give effect to that suggestion. On page 113, the bill made provision that information can be given to a foreign country subject to a control function by the National Director of Public Prosecutions. The police wants this clause to be removed, and we do agree with that. So subclause 2 is therefore omitted. On page 114, in subclause 3, it's merely cosmetic amendments to the clause. The next clause where amendment is proposed is foreign request for assistance and cooperation. It's clause 46, which sets out a procedure for foreign request for assistance and cooperation. The only amendment that we propose to that clause is on page 117, where we take out in paragraph C the word "in a foreign state." On page 119, compliance with order of the designated judge till the end of since the printing kind of differs, I think let's say another end of but let's start on with clause 49 that deals with the issuing of a direction requesting foreign mutual assistance. Subclause 1 is amended. This also originated from suggestions from the NPA and the South African Police Service that we must not just restrict it to the fact that the offence has been committed, but also to the extent that it may be necessary to determine whether the offence has been committed. So that amendment is proposed to clause 49.1. On page 123 and subclause 2, a small technical or cosmetic amendment is proposed. And that brings us to the end of mutual legal assistance. Okay, chapter 7 deals with the 24/7 point of contact. This point of contact is mainly a certain in the South African Police Service that is supposed to coordinate cyber crime investigations in the South African Police and also to ensure for mutual legal assistance between the police and foreign countries. While the NPA at some stage did indicate that few countries did legislate on this aspect, and it's probably not necessary to legislate for a 24/7 point of contact, our submission is that it is necessary to do this. It will ensure that there is political oversight and the functions and obligations of a certain department is specifically specified, as well as the powers of the 24/7 point of contact. So from our perspective, it's necessary to legislate for a 24/7 point of contact. On page 126, subclause 5, there's a cosmetic amendment in respect of the National Strategic Intelligence Act. We take out the reference to Act Number 39 of 1994. Okay, that's the end of the 24/7 point of contact. And we're dealing with evidence now. That's in Chapter 8. It's on page 127. The first amendment to Clause 51 is merely, in addition to affidavit, also to state a solemn or a test declaration right through this clause. On page 128, I believe this, where we amend subclause 1, item 3, is to give effect to the proposals of Jason Jordan to the effect that the examination process must be fully documented, and we insert it specifically in this clause. And that is the sum total of amendments to the clause. On page 131, chapter 9, that deals with the obligations of electronic communications service providers. A cosmetic amendment is proposed on page 132. And that's also the end of the obligations on electronic communication service providers. Chapter 10 deals with structures to deal with cyber security. Again, on page 133, insofar as it relates to clause 53, the short title of the National Strategic Intelligence Act is omitted. I believe previously we did indicate that the definition should be inserted in clause 1 of the bill to define that act. Then, on page 135, that relates to the departments and functionaries that should be involved or can be requested to assist the CRC in its dealings. And we did make provision that other departments of states, other than those that is already stipulated in 8B1-2-4, as well as other institutions that exercise a public power, perform a public function in terms of any legislation, or any other person or entity, can be requested to assist the Cyber Response Committee with its functions. We agree with this insertion.
I think Honorable Hon agrees with you.
No.
I can see he's smiling.
Don't put anything regarding cybersecurity in my mouth. I know the department know what our view is on this.
I'm trying to assist you. May I proceed?
Mr. Jefferson, on page 135, that clause 54 that deals with government structures supporting cyber security. There was a request by the Department of Defense that the previous clause in the consultation bill should be entertained in a bill. And in terms of that clause, specific structures were established in different departments with certain functions to deal with cyber security. The Department of Defense addressed the committee and they requested that we should try to entertain their previous proposal, or if that cannot be entertained, that we should at least try to make provision for the establishment of a structure in the Department of Defense to deal with the cyber offensive and defensive capabilities. The last mentioned was not mentioned in the committee, but when further consultation with the DOD took place, that option was raised. Our submission is that there was previously a decision from the executive that we should not specify the structures involved and specifically tell the rest of the world what they do, and that all that structures can be established on an administrative basis, and you don't need legislation for that purposes. I think the department's kind of bound by that policy decision that was taken.
One needs to be seen as a secret entity within department, and that people are establishing secret institutions to deal with public matters.
Well, Mr. Chairperson, it may be perceived by the public as well as maybe within a department that something secret is being established in a department, but yes, I think we are bound by the executive decision and cannot entertain that.
We are not bound by anything.
That's why we cannot advise according to our mandate that the committee must consider it. That is why I just propose it to the committee and make sure it is brought under the attention of
just as soon as we have established those.
Okay. On page 139, we deal with the establishment of nodal points and a computer security incident response team, which is a.
Give Honourable Horn an opportunity to listen to the good news.
Thank you, Mr. Chairperson. Clause 55 is very important for purposes of cybersecurity. It is a clause that established some capacity for us to deal with cybersecurity in South Africa. During the public consultation process, I don't think there were excessive concerns against the establishment of nodal points. Nodal points must be distinguished from computer security incident response teams, which is relatively expensive to establish and run. There is a cosmetical change on page 140, and that is just to clarify the consultation requirement further, to say that the cabinet member of communications do not need to consult with himself if he is involved in the establishment of a nodal point. An important clause that, or provision that is however inserted is item 2 under paragraph B of clause 55.1, which where we stipulate that the nodal points must be established after consultation with any regulatory body in terms of any laws which exercise regulatory control over the entity of that sector. In the communication sector, I believe this is quite important, and this to a large extent cater for concern that was raised. That consultation requirement, as well as the clarification of the consultation with cabinet members, is repeated right through the clause. I'm not going to deal with that in detail. It has got the same objective. Information sharing is dealt with in clause 57, and there's no option to propose. Chapter 11 deals with critical information infrastructure protection. Obviously, there was concerns during a public consultation process regarding mainly the fact that the State Security Agency is running critical information infrastructure protection in South Africa. There was also a reference to a perceived duplication. If you look at the current critical infrastructure bill and this provision, and other concerns were raised, but I think we did satisfactorily explain that during the public consultation process. However, to cater for, I think it was a comment that was received from the provinces on page 147 that relates to subclause 3, where we specifically insert wording to the effect that the consent or concurrence of the Premier of a province should be obtained before critical information infrastructure can be declared. I believe that is a constitutional imperative. Provinces is independent in terms of constitution. On page 50, further amendments are proposed to subclause 7A to insert a financial sector regulator in that clause. That deals with dispute mechanisms, amongst others, against the declaration of a critical information infrastructure or the directive. According to the comment we received, they want the wording as well as any subsequent amendment of the directive specifically included in that clause. That's obviously not necessary, but we try to accommodate that. On page 152, we deal with subclause 7. It's again part of this the dispute resolution mechanism, where we in paragraph I we use wide wording competent entity or person, but during the public consultation process we were specifically requested to insert the wording or a financial institution or a financial sector regulator contemplated in subsection 3H or a company entity or person contemplated in subsection 3.1 in that clause to clarify the clause further. On page 153 we need to clarify the clause where we specifically try to further define the notice, namely a notice referred to in subsection 9, in 11, the same. Then this is a lot of comments that were received by the provinces. A B clause were inserted in subclause 11. In terms of this clause, it specifies that if a person, company, entity, critical information infrastructure does not take the necessary steps, the Minister of State Security may take that obligations on him and implement the necessary steps. Provincial government has pointed out that there's a constitutional process that needs to be followed to deal with the failure of provinces to deal or implement obligations, mainly those prescribed in section 100 of the Constitution. So the clause now specifically referred to that procedure. Page 154 deals with the auditing of critical information infrastructures. I don't think there were any options that were proposed to this clause. Chapter 12 deals with agreement with foreign states. There were no options proposed. Chapter 13 deal with general provisions. First is that the National Director of Public Prosecution must keep statistics. on page 162, clause 61 deal with the repeal amendment of laws, and clause 62 deals with regulations that need to be made in terms of this act, and it is substantial. And it ends on page 165. Clause 63 deals with short title and commencement. Okay. Something that was probably not considered in detail during the whole process of the bill is the law's repeal and amendment in the schedule. As I go through this. Look, there was
With the concurrence of the honourable members, I don't think you should go through that. I mean, it's a list of those acts, and then we can look at them ourselves. But I think you have done justice to what we are required to do. Honourable members, we ask for responses from the department. And I think we are well prepared. You also had time to internalize this very technical bill. And I think they have responded to our satisfaction. To the amazement of Honorable Horn, he's even closing his mouth.
Yes, the one thing that remains of worry is that, and I mean, I understand how the department went about this, but the one thing that is different is that in the past, we also, as a committee, with the help of the department, dealt with those submissions received with which the department does not agree. Now, this time around, what has, for all practical purposes, happened is we've only dealt with those submissions received with which the department is in agreement. So, where I'm sitting, I'm just asking, what about those with which the department is not in agreement in respect of other legislation? It sometimes happens that the committee, on behalf of Parliament, say, but even though you as the department is not in agreement, we buy into the submission and it must be contained in the proposals going forward.
Can we get a response to that?
Mr. Jefferson, from the department's perspective, I believe first what we did, was to in detail deal with all the comments and responses. And we did first, in a summary, deal with adverse comment against the bill, as well as comments for the bill. In the document, or this document that was drafted, we did try to entertain some of the comments that we received. However, certain of the comments that we received was adequately explained during the comment and responses process, why we cannot entertain that. Something that do stand out in the comment and responses is probably critical information infrastructure vis-a-vis a cyber bill. To a large extent, first, there's the National Cybercrime Policy Framework that requires legislation to be enacted to deal with critical information infrastructure protection. So that was dealt with in the bill. Regarding the government agency involved, I believe if you look at the National Strategic Intelligence Act, I think it's section 2B, you'll see that the State Security Agency has already got a mandate to deal with critical electronic infrastructures in South Africa. The bill merely take or further defines that. It's not something that is not in the statute book. We do not deviate from past legislation that was enacted. But yes, there may probably be some aspects which or some committee members.
I don't think that the question was that you really should deal with those matters that you didn't agree with. It was really a request to find out why this time you didn't adopt that approach.
Jefferson, according to us, we did take everything into account. All viable suggestions and amendments were accommodated. I believe during the responses we gave, we did explain why we follow this course. And it's admitted that, except maybe for critical information infrastructure and division of the bill, we did try to accommodate most, if not all, the comments.
I think that should suffice. That when things are not viable, you really don't pursue them. Honourable Breitenbach.
Thank you, Mr. Robertson. You're an old prosecutor, as am I. You're not answering the question. Is there a good reason for that?
You know, I'm the presiding officer, so I'm the one who can pass judgment. You can only make an input.
My input is he's not answering the question. I'd love to know why.
I think he has answered.
He has
not. No, he has.
No, he
has. No, he's simply saying that...
He's going in a long, circuitous route to tell us that they considered it, but he's not telling us why we haven't seen it. That's what we want to know. Why haven't we seen it?
You know, in life, you only do things that are necessary. Not you don't do the unnecessary.
If that's what true, Mr. Chair, I'd be lying on the beach in the Bahamas.
Honourable, you know, I think you are disappointed that he has performed so well. Now you want, Honourable.
No,
I really want to say that we're dealing with a very complex matter, and you really have handled it very well to our satisfaction. But it's only that we are craving for more, and so. Honourable Breitenbach's question is really an indication that she wants more, but Ms. Pili?
Thank you, Chair. The document that we circulated today is a document that relates to the changes that we think should be made. But if we look at what we circulated a while ago, I may have missed one of the meetings before the committee, so I just have a bit of a gap. But there's a document that says summary of written submissions and responses thereto. It's a very long document. And it's in a table format.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's in a table format here. It is that document actually...
No,
just to listen to one another is very important, because if she tries to provide you with an answer, and then you disrupt her. Then it becomes questionable whether this is still an honorable committee of parliament.
Can you allow her to finish? Because as lawyers, we know
that you know, anything that is half explained will never get a true meaning. Can you? Mrs. Pile, can you just finish, and then the honourable members have the fullest right to respond to what we have said.
The document that I'm referring to is in a table format, and it refers to each and every comment that we received. It is in excess of 200 pages, and I think maybe perhaps to make it simpler for the committee to go through it, we dealt with the comments that we agreed with. We could summarize all the issues that we don't agree with very quickly and deal with that possibly tomorrow or this afternoon. But we've dealt with everything in writing, and it's with the committee.
I see two hands.
Honorable Rettenbach and Honorable Horn.
Thank you. I'm not sure that it would be necessary for you to summarize them today for tomorrow's purposes. If you could just provide a list of those that you don't agree with, you can read them ourselves. If I could have a copy of that document, I'd be very grateful. And if you just point out which ones you haven't agreed with, you can read it ourselves. There's no need for you to summarize it for us.
That's a progressive proposal that I think we must accept, Honourable Horn.
Well, if I may then be regressive, the reality is that in the past, the way we have dealt with this is to, with the help of the department, deal with all of the responses. And my point is exactly what has just been admitted to, that the way we've dealt with it now is to only look at redrafts along with what the department is in agreement with. We have never, like we've now, just last week, done with the traditional courts bill, where the department also, along with this tabulated manner, told us with what they are in agreement and with what not. And this committee and you, Chair, will remind yourselves that in our engagement with the department, certain further developments took place, whether we agree with it or not, but the committee, by a majority, has given certain directives to the department to effect certain changes, along with certain of the comments which the committee did not agree with. So my question remains, why should the committee not place itself in the very same position to say, yes, the Department of Justice, even though you say you do not agree with these comments and it's not viable or we don't want to effect further changes, we as the committee feel that it should be taken reflected in the further development of the bill.
That's a fair comment, but it's overtaken by what your colleague is saying. I think we should go with what Honorable Breitenbach is saying, that members should read for themselves. I don't think also we need to meet tomorrow. We must allow the department enough time to go and polish the bill, and next week then we consider whether or not we accept the bill. Mrs. Pillay, do you want to say something? Honorable members, I think we have done very well, in particular the department. We harassed you last time. I thought that you would not be wanting to come back to appear before us, but it was a constructive harassment, if there's something like that. And maybe that made you perform beyond the expectation. And thank you very much. We will communicate with you, our able Mr. Sia here. It will direct us as to when you come back, and then we can finalize the bill. But thank you very much. So tomorrow you don't have to go to Pretoria. You can enjoy the freedom of the city of Cape Town without any permission from Mr. Horn. The meeting is adjourned. The meeting is adjourned.